Great, I said. They're going to think you're dining with your dad.
My uncle, maybe. My dad's younger brother.
It was one of those meals where the food wasn't important. I can remember everything else about the evening, but I can't remember what I ordered. Steak, maybe. Or ravioli. Something. I know we ate. We talked a lot, about the kind of stuff we probably wouldn't share with just anybody. I came very close to breaking down and asking her if she wanted to find a motel. But I didn't. We had a glass of wine each, and then switched to water. There was an unspoken agreement we needed to stay sharp for the next day. I paid the check, and we left at midnight, separately. She was bright, even though it was late. She was full of life and energy and focus. She was bubbling with anticipation. Her eyes were shining. I stood on the street and watched her drive away.
Someone's coming,
Elizabeth Beck said, 10 years later. I glanced out the window and saw a gray Taurus far in the distance. The color blended with the rock and the weather and made it hard to see. It was maybe 2 miles away, coming around a curve in the road, moving fast. Villanueva's car. I told Elizabeth to stay put and keep an eye on Richard, and I went downstairs and out the back door. I retrieved Angel Doll's keys from my hidden bundle, put them in my jacket pocket. I took Duffy's Glock and her spare magazines, too. I wanted her to get them back intact. It was important to me. She was already in enough trouble. I stashed them in my coat pocket with my Beretta and walked around to the front of the house and got in a Cadillac. Drove it up to the gate and slid out and waited out of sight. The Taurus stopped outside the gate, and I saw Villanueva at the wheel with Duffy next to him and Elliot in the back. I stepped out of hiding and took the chain off the gate and swung it open. Villanueva eased through and stopped nose to nose with the Cadillac. Then three doors opened, and they all climbed out into the cold and stared at me.
What the hell happened to you?
Villanueva said. I touched my mouth. It felt swollen and tender. Walked into a door, I said. Villanueva glanced at the gatehouse.
You're a doorman. Am I right?
You okay? Duffy asked.
I'm in better shape than the doorman.
Why are we here?
Plan B, I said. We're going to Portland, but if we don't find what we need up there, we're going to have to come back here and wait. So two of you are coming out with me right now, and the other one is staying here to hold the fort. I turned around and pointed at the house. The center, second-floor window has got a big machine gun mounted in it to cover the approach. I need one of you in there manning it. Nobody volunteered. I looked straight at Villanueva. He was old enough to have been drafted way back. He might have spent time around big machine guns. You do it, Terry.
Not me. I'm coming out with you to find Teresa.
He said it like there was going to be no way to argue with him.
Okay, I'll do it,
Elliot said. Thanks. You ever seen a Vietnam movie? Seen the door gunner on a Huey? That's you. If they come, they won't try to get through the gate. They'll go in the front window of the gatehouse and out the back door, or the back window, so you'll be ready to hose them down as they come out.
What if it's dark?
We'll be back before dark.
Okay. Who's in the house?
Beck's family and the cook. They're non-combatants, but they won't leave.
What about Beck himself?
He'll come back with the others. If he got away again in the confusion, it wouldn't break my heart. But if he got hit in the confusion, it wouldn't break my heart either.
Okay.
They probably won't show up. They're busy. This is all just a precaution.
Okay.
You keep the Cadillac. We'll take the Taurus. Villanueva got back in the Ford and reversed it out through the gate again. I walked out with Duffy and closed the gate from the outside and chained it and locked it and tossed the padlock key over to Elliot. See you later, I said. He turned the Cadillac around, and I watched him drive it down toward the house. Then I got in the Taurus with Duffy and Villanueva. She took the front seat. I took the back. I got her Glock and her spare magazines out of my pocket and passed them forward to her, like a little ceremony. Thanks for the loan. She put the Glock in her shoulder holster and the magazines in her purse.
You're very welcome.
Teresa first, Villanueva said. Quinn second. Okay?
Agreed, I said. He K-turned on the road and took off west.
So, where do we look?
Choice of three locations. There's the warehouse, there's a city center office, and there's a business park near the airport. You can't keep a prisoner in a city center office building over the weekend, and the warehouse is too busy. They just had a big shipment. So my vote goes with the business park.
I-95 or Route 1?
Route 1. We drove in silence 15 miles inland and turned north on Route 1 toward Portland. Chapter 13. It was early afternoon on a Saturday, so the business park was quiet. It was rinsed clean by rain, and it looked fresh and new. The metal buildings glowed like dull pewter under the gray of the sky. We cruised through the network of streets at maybe 20 miles an hour. Saw nobody. Quinn's building looked locked up tight. I turned my head as we drove by and studied the sign again. Xavier Export Company. The words were professionally etched on thick stainless steel, but the oversized X's looked like an amateur's idea of graphic design.
"Why does it say export?" Duffy asked. "He's importing stuff, surely."
"How do we get in?" Villanueva asked.
"We break in," I said. "Through the rear, I guess." The buildings were laid out back to back, with neat parking lots in front of each of them. Everything else in the park was either a road or new lawn, bounded by neat, poured concrete curbs. There were no fences anywhere. The building directly behind Quinn's was labeled Paul Keast and Chris Maiden, Professional Catering Services. It was closed up and deserted. I could see past it all the way to Quinn's back door, which was a plain metal rectangle painted dull red.
"Nobody around," Duffy said.
There was a window on Quinn's back wall near the red door. It was made from pebbled glass, probably a bathroom window. It had iron bars over it.
"Security system?" Villanueva said.
"On a new place like this?"
"Almost certainly." "Wired direct to the cops?"
"I doubt it. That wouldn't be smart for a guy like Quinn. He doesn't want the cops snooping around every time some kid busts his windows."
"Private company?"
"That's my guess. Or his own people."
"So, how do we do it?"
"We do it real fast. Get in and out before anybody reacts. We can risk 5 or 10 minutes, probably."
"One at the front, two at the back?"
"You got it. You take the front." I told him to pop the trunk, and then Duffy and I slid out of the car. The air was cold and damp, and the wind was blowing. I took the tire iron out from under the spare wheel and closed the trunk lid and watched the car drive away. Duffy and I walked down the side of the catering place and across the dividing lawn to Quinn's bathroom window. I put my ear against the cold metal siding and listened. Heard nothing. Then I looked at the window bars. They were made up from a shallow, one-piece rectangular iron basket that was secured by 8 machine screws, 2 on each side of the 4 sides of the rectangle. The screws went through welded flanges the size of quarters. The screw heads themselves were the size of nickels. Duffy pulled the Glock out of her shoulder holster. I heard it scrape on the leather. I checked the Beretta in my coat pocket, held the tire iron two-handed, put my ear back on the siding.